Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
I don't even know where to begin to talk with you about Dr. Frank Jones. I'm going to let him tell you a little bit about himself, but what I will tell you is that he is a phenomenal physician and has captured my attention from his community service. And when I say community service, someone who's committed to the lives of African-American men in particular, from coaching baseball, coaching t-ball, to, you know, just having parties for young men, for being a surrogate dad, for, you know, to do all of that and to be a surgeon, trauma surgeon at one of the, I think, probably the busiest, probably trauma center in the Southeast, you know, at Grady Hospital, you know, to find a way to do all of that and to do what you did, Frank, is just absolutely impressive, man. And just a regular old brother. That's all I can say, man. Y'all, let's welcome Frank Jones to the gist of the matter. Dr. Frank Jones, let's put it together. Let's show him some love.
Bro. Thank you.
I am just honored to have a man of your status, you know, to be able to spend some time with the community. Tell us about yourself and a little bit about your background, where you're from, you know, and you know, just a little bit about who you are and what you do.
Okay. I'm originally from Augusta, Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up in Augusta and lived there for most of my life. I had a really positive upbringing. Both of my parents were in education.
Mm-hmm.
My father had his PhD. My mother went to Savannah State College. My father went to Payne College.
Okay.
And they really, really, really always stressed education, mm-hmm. And I grew up with three other siblings who are great individuals,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Personally. I know.
And just really, Augusta was a great place. It was definitely a village before we used that term.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it takes a village. And so really great place to grow up and really be inspired by a lot of the educators and people that were there. There were not very many doctors there. There was one black doctor that I knew of that mm-hmm. was there. But my pediatrician, who was a white pediatrician, was very instrumental in, you know, kind of not mentoring me, but I looked up to him, mm-hmm. and he didn't even know I was looking up to him. But grew up, I had a seventh grade teacher
mm-hmm.
who his name was Raymond Jenkins, and he taught at my elementary school. My first mentor, I should say, was my older brother,
mm-hmm.
Keith Jones.
Oh, wow.
He's 3 years ahead of me.
So
he had Mr. Jenkins also. And he went to class one day, and he came home, and the teacher, Dr. Jenkins, had them memorizing things that happened in the digestive system.
Uh-huh.
If you eat a piece of bread, if you eat a piece of meat, if you eat carbohydrates, protein, he had them memorize that. And so when he came home, and he had me to help him try to memorize, you know, this morning I ate some bread. In my mouth, the peristaltic actions of my esophagus. And I was like, wow, where did he get this from? And so I was impressed about that from the very beginning.
Yeah.
Little did I know that was my first introduction to wanting to become a physician.
Mm-hmm.
And as chance would have it, I had that same teacher in seventh grade, and so I had that same experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of got the bug at that time. I thought I wanted to be a physician, but I wasn't quite sure if I wanted to or not. And then it wasn't until I got to high school and I had an 11th grade teacher, Miss Mamie Williams, who asked me what did I want to be with my life.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, I told her, you know, I think I want to major in PE and be a kinesiologist.
Mm-hmm.
She said, you mean you don't want to go to medical school? I said, I don't know. I don't know enough about it. She told me right then, she said, you need to go to medical school.
Uh-huh.
And from that point on, that was the first time that I really, really thought about becoming a physician.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, now this was my senior year in high school, she gave me an application. So I had already knew that I was going to Morehouse.
Mm-hmm.
She had gone on, not online because we didn't have computers back then. But she had found this program, a summer program at Morehouse. It's called the Office of Health Professions for incoming freshmen that wanted to go to medical school.
Mm-hmm.
And she sat there while I filled it out and helped me turn it in.
Wow.
That was one of the best decisions that I ever made in my life, besides marrying my wife, who you know.
Yeah,
very
I know,
well.
I know.
that was one of the best decisions that I made. And so I participated in a summer program at Morehouse for black males, freshmen that wanted to go to medical school.
Mm-hmm.
And there I met a group of mentors who changed my life.
Yes.
Basically. And not only did the mentors change my life, but my colleagues and classmates, who most of them today are physicians, we went through the same. It was like pledging almost. We went through the same experience. And most of us are physicians today.
Wow.
And so that had a very impactful part of my life. From there, I went through Morehouse and, you know, had a great experience at Morehouse College. Ended up pledging my sophomore year.
What you pledge, man?
I was the only one fraternity.
Tell the world. Don't say that. Don't say that. You're going to make me. You're going
to
make me get up out of my seat, man, and start spinning and going on. I ain't wearing my boots today.
I have mine in the car, so I don't have to worry about it. But that was a great thing, and it also was a little bit challenging. I never regret ever pledging, but, you know, it kind of affected my GPA.
Oh, I know
bit.
It did. I know.
Just a little bit.
Man, please.
And so it wasn't just pledge. It was me. I take full responsibility.
You know what? It's funny you say that, because I remember when my son pledged, and my to this day, I'm going to say this on the radio, and it don't matter now. It don't matter now. When I saw my son's GPA, I had to make sure my wife did not see his grades. Because my wife would have pulled the plug on it. She would have had my wife would have pulled the plug on it, Doc. So I had to cover for him and some others. Because, you know, my wife would have gone absolutely berserk.
Yeah, I know exactly. Before I pledged, I had a 3.4 GPA.
Mm-hmm.
The semester I pledged, I had a 1.5
GPA. I know. I get it.
And it was so difficult to recover from that.
I know. Go on, finish up. But you just made me think about it. Finish telling us, man. This is so interesting.
Yeah, so what's interesting is, you know, again, we had a community of kids that wanted to go to medical school. Let me just go back and talk about the man, Mr. Thomas Blocker.
Okay, yeah.
Who is responsible for thousands of African-American physicians, dentists, researchers, pharmacists coming out of Morehouse.
Yes.
Not just Mr. Blocker, but Dr. J.K. Haynes, George Nottingham. It was a group of people. Those were our mentors. Mm-hmm. We had instructors who were there that were our instructors during that summer program. They stayed with us, and they told us we were going to be successful.
Mm-hmm.
And they stayed with us throughout our entire college career.
Mm-hmm.
Fast forward to when it's time to actually apply to medical school, and I applied, ended up having to apply three times to get into medical school.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my friends that applied, most of them got in the first time, and the vast majority of them went up to Meharry, went up to Nashville, a place that you're familiar with.
Yeah, very much so, very much Nashville. So. Yes, sir. We call it Nash Vegas.
So I had so many frat brothers and friends, you know, from Morehouse that were getting to medical school, and it was just me. I was like, why am I the only one that's not getting into school? And then I had to be introspective and look at, well, maybe it's something I'm not doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm thinking, oh, I'm a Morehouse man. I'm a cute. You know, I'm supposed to be in school.
Right.
But there's a lot more to it than that. And I was fortunate to meet a young lady by the name of Ms. Claudia Sion. So I applied the first year, got rejected. Applied the second year, got rejected. Applied the third time, and I went over to Morehouse and had a conversation with Ms. Claudia Sion. She was the assistant director of admissions at Morehouse.
Mm-hmm.
And I went over there, and I, you know, was upset. You know, I got the GPA. I've done this. I've done that. I've done volunteering. You know, how come I can't get into Morehouse School of Medicine?
Mm-hmm.
And basically, I went over there. You know how we were, the bros.
Right.
I went over there, and kind of went off on her a little bit, which was the wrong thing to do.
Well, let's do this, Frank. Let's do this. That music means we had to go to a break. When we come back, we're going to pick up the conversation right here, right where you were at the point of trying to figure out what you need to do to get into medical school. Because I think this sets the stage for what's about to happen in your life. It's very meteoric. And we're going to talk about it. All right. Dr. Bennett, Dr. Jones, we about to deal with this thing about medical school, black doctors. And there are some programs. I'm going to let Frank tell you about them. But we're going to talk about Pre-Med Solutions, and we're going to talk about the Atlanta Medical Association. Is that right, Frank? Did I get it right? Uh-oh. We'll talk about it when I come back on the other side. News and Talk Radio 1380 WAOK, the voice of the community.
News and Talk 1380 WAOK.
We got somebody here who is skilled at helping and can position you to make a strong case for admissions to a graduate program in medicine. He was telling us his story, and we want to pick up the conversation right at that point where he was dealing with this issue of not getting into medical school. Tell us, Frank. Okay.
But before I go on, I have to go back just a little bit. I cannot go on without talking about my family.
Okay.
My wife, Dr. Jada Bussey-Jones, is on faculty at Emory University. She's a professor of medicine, vice chair, and the dean there. And I have a son, Kelvin, who is a first-year law student at Howard University.
Yeah.
And my son, Jaden, who is a senior at Woodward Academy.
What you say?
Year. So that's why I do everything that I do. So there's no way I could go on because I might forget about it later. I get too excited talking about med school. But I can never forget about my family.
I know it,
so I just have to give a shout-out to them. But, yeah, I was mentioning Miss Claudia Sion. She was the admissions director at Morehouse. And so I went over to Morehouse trying to talk my way.
Now, you're talking about the medical school, not the
medical
college.
School. Okay. Morehouse School of Medicine.
All right.
So I went over to the school and tried to talk my way into school.
Mm-hmm.
And I literally was kind of going off on her a little bit, mm-hmm. you know, which is really out of my character. That's not really who I am. But I was so frustrated. All my friends were in school, all my classmates and everybody, and I was just so frustrated. And so when we finished the conversation, she said, "Now, are you finished talking? Are you finished? Because I'm going to tell you what you need to do." And I always laugh because this was a woman. She's from Brooklyn. She is. She was. I think she had a little Puerto Rican in her. She had a little Italian in her, and she had a little Black in her.
Uh-oh.
And so, long story short, she really let me have it, saying that I need to change my way of thinking and change everything I was doing.
Uh-huh.
And so at that point, she outlined several of the things that I needed to do to get mm-hmm. into school.
Okay.
And I followed most of them. I can't say I followed all of them, but what she was saying made a lot of sense. And mm-hmm. so I went and made a plan to finish doing what she told me to do.
Mm-hmm.
Now, at this point, I was on the waiting list. That's the list that you get on. You don't get accepted, but you don't get rejected.
The waiting list at which school?
At Morehouse School of Medicine.
Okay.
All right. I got rejected at all the other schools that I applied to. So I was only on the waiting list at Morehouse School of Medicine. Fast forward, I went to a summer program that summer in Virginia. And that was before the time that we had cell phones. So I was in my dormitory, and that Friday I said, I was supposed to be in class. I said, I'm not going to class today. I'm just not feeling it. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to class today. My roommate, who was a doctor now, Dr. Kevin Watt, also decided he wasn't going to class. Now, I'm not advocating don't go to class. But we just, you know, both of us are trying to get in school. We just decided we weren't going to class that day. And so I literally went out and took a walk while he was there in the room.
Mm-hmm.
Again, before the time of cell phones, but we had a telephone in the room.
Okay.
We got a phone call from Miss. He got a phone call from Miss Claudia Sion.
Uh-huh.
And she told him that she had one spot left at the Morehouse class of 1991 to come and sit in, I mean, to join the class for medical school. And she wanted to give that spot to me. But if I didn't call her back in 30 minutes, she was going to give it to the next person on her list. Just so happened that I walked in about 5 minutes later.
Just so happened.
Just so happened.
Uh-huh.
It didn't just so happen.
Yeah.
You know,
you know how I think.
It didn't just so happen.
The creator had figured this thing out.
Yeah. And so, but I came in the room, and he said, "You got to call Miss Sion right away. She's got a spot for you in the class." I mean, that means that I got a chance to go to medical school. I thought everything, all my chances were over for that year. It would have been four times I would have had to apply. So I still wasn't quite sure, but I talked to her on the phone. I said, "But I don't have any money. I don't know what I'm supposed to do. I haven't registered in the class." He said, "Frank, do you want to go to medical school?
Right.
If you do, you be here." This was a Friday afternoon.
Right.
He said, "You be here Monday morning at 8 o'clock. So I drove back from Virginia back to Atlanta, went to Morehouse, showed up in class. I was nervous because I thought, you know, I'm not really in class. You know, they're not going to have my name. They're not going to know anything. And when I got there and I saw they had, you know how they have little placards.
Right.
Everybody's in class. And they had my name, Frank Jones. There, I knew that something special had happened. And so if I had gone to class that day, or if my classmate had gone to class that day, she would have just gone on to the next person because we would have had no way of knowing that she was looking for me.
Right.
And so I probably would not be a doctor today.
Wow.
And so I believe that was divine intervention. And I talk about that everywhere I go. That was divine intervention, and that's really where I am today. So I give her so much praise for getting me to this point.
My goodness. Listen, the number is 404-892-2703. You can give us a call. I want to take a few callers. I saw a couple callers here who wanted to say they had a question for Dr. Jones. Go on and give me a call back. I got some lines that are open, and you can get in. Because what we're going to do, I'm going to shift gears real soon, and I want to start talking about what all of this has led Dr. Jones to do, Dr. Frank Jones, in light of his upbringing and especially in light of his experiences with attempting to get into medical school. Something has come from has come of it, and it planted the seeds to create a very, what I call, phenomenal program that's housed here in Atlanta. We're going to hear more about that. 404-892-2703. Let me go to Joseph from Boston. Hello, Joseph. How you doing?
How you doing? Simplify, Dr.
Simplify,
Bennett.
Man. How you doing? What's up?
I'm calling from Western Massachusetts, Berkshire County.
Okay.
Old Blaze of W.E.B. Du Bois, Great Barrington, Massachusetts. A black, first black social scientist, first black person to get a PhD at Harvard University. Co-founder of NAACP, and most of all, a black man that never sold out to the system, like I'm trying not to do. Yeah. Before I ask your guest a question, you still there? You can hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. I'm listening. Go ahead.
Before I ask your guest a question, you brought up the black football, black quarterback. I'll be careful now because I'm in Brady country. Tom Brady, the greatest quarterback to ever play.
Y'all playing Kansas City today. I don't know how's that going so far.
When I wait for my, when you're in the woods, you got to go with the YouTube. I did that DirecTV stuff. If I wait to go to YouTube and watch the game, or at least the highlight. Yeah, but, you know, the black quarterback, this is how racism is penetrated in people. Even black people will show racism, like me sometimes, because I like Tom Brady. He's a nice guy, but he's so white, I can identify more with a black man.
Uh-huh.
So, I remember Jimmy the Greek, Al Campanile, 1987 April, Dr. Martin Luther King's birthday. Ted Koppel asked Al Campanile why there ain't no black managers in baseball. He tried to say, really, they don't have the lessons, they're not intelligent enough. So after that, as a young, conscious black man from New York City growing up, I always started rooting for the black quarterback. But this is not racism. You got to change with the time. I'm going to get to the question to your guest.
All right.
But so my favorite team was Philadelphia, because Philadelphia gave Randall Cunningham a chance.
Right.
Donovan McNabb and Michael Vick. So when Philadelphia was playing Patriots, you know, I always root for the home team. It's good for business sense. I really was rooting for Philadelphia, but I love the Patriots. So what I'm saying to me, I'm finishing up. I'm in New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina, so I work with two contractors to play football, one for USC with Reggie Bush, and one that played for Grambling State Historical Black College. And we were talking about the topic, the black quarterback. But you get so caught up with it that now you have so much black quarterback on the game, you got so many black coaches that, you know, you can't really – you got to go with the time. So I'm with Tom Brady. It doesn't matter if you're black, white, or what, because we prove ourselves. We don't need to prove to nobody. We could do anything the white man can do. But to actually get your question, yes, doctor, I went to Cuba to try to live. And one of the things, because of the medical reason. Now, mind you, keep this in mind, and I want to hear your question, your answer about it. Cuba, life expectancy is equivalent to America. 78, 79 years old. Mind you, now it's a third world country with an embargo for over 50 years. Cuba infant mortality rate is lower than that for African American. They have the lowest AIDS capital in the Western Hemisphere, lowest, almost zero gun violence, lowest crime rate. After 9/11 here in America, I rarely go to emergency. I haven't seen a doctor in 5 years.
Joseph, you hear that music? That means I got to go to a break. I'm going to hold you over. When I come back, I'm going to let you frame your question, and you can pose it to Dr. Jones, all right? Let me hold you over. I got to go to a break. Don't go anywhere, all right? Hey, y'all, got to go to a break. That's what that music means. And I want to tell you right now, if you're interested in graduate school, especially trying to get in medical school, you need to tell somebody what's on the air. If you're interested, you need to listen. You need to tell somebody about us. And all I want to tell you is don't you worry about a thing. We're going to take care of you. We're going to help you get yourself ready for this next step in your life. Dr. Bennett, Dr. Jones, be back with you in a minute. News and Talk Radio, 1380 WAOK, the voice of the community.
News and Talk 1380 WAOK.
With my friend, my colleague, my fraternity brother, Dr. Frank Jones. I call him Charles Drew incarnate. I guess another permutation. I like that word. I like that word.
Well, he is frat. And he was at Howard University.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I certainly would, take that.
Oh, man. Charles
I would
Drew.
Take that. Somebody
oh, yeah.
I truly
oh,
respect.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And you know what? It's funny, Frank, because you stand in the lineage or the tradition of a lot of men from Morehouse who went on to medical school.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as I was sharing with you, my daughter's roommate, her father went to Morehouse, and he's an anesthesiologist.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll talk more about that a little later. But there's a whole, I mean, if you check, and I, let me use some colloquial language. We got some receipts, baby. We got some receipts.
Mm-hmm.
You can run the tape, baby. There are a lot of black physicians
mm-hmm.
that have come, you know, out of Morehouse.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, it's just mind boggling if you look at the amount of men Morehouse has sent
mm-hmm.
and that are in the medical professions.
Yeah.
I'm going to go back to the line. Joseph is calling, and Joseph was raising a question. He was talking about life expectancy. And he was talking about Cuba. I think he was actually framing a question in light of that. Joseph, we back with you. Go ahead, man.
Yeah, I'm going to frame the question. What I'm getting at, after 9/11, remember what I'm saying is the black man is always the boogeyman in America when America is going through stress. And after 9/11, I noticed there's a major change in the hospital. They got all kind of strictness. The emergency room, UMass Medical Center in Worcester, you got to go to a metal detector. I went to St. Vincent Hospital in Worcester just to warm up and make some coffee. A security guard come and asked me, what's that? Is that cocaine you got in the clear bottle? I told him it was sugar. I said, why are you so disrespectful? Why would I pull out? What I'm getting at, five security guards surrounding me. Stop putting the glove on. It's so easy. So does it make sense of me as a black man to self-medicate and to stay away from the whole system because of this hospital now is becoming like a fourth fit, like the police station, which I stay away from? And that's why they help. Disparity in Boston for Roxbury is 20 years different. Life expectancy from Back Bay, which is like walking distance. I'll hang up a list.
Okay, thank you very much. All right. Well, his question about brother self-medicating, and I don't know. I don't even know how to answer. Joseph asked me a question I don't even know the answer to. I mean, clearly, brothers do all kinds of things. As a result of some of the problems that we face in a system that sometimes I struggle with white supremacy versus white entitlement.
Mm-hmm.
I think those two terms are kind of connected, but a system that clearly preferences, you know, and assigns and hands out benefits, I do believe, to persons because of or that their skin color kind of comes into play with when brothers in those kinds of systems. Clearly, we do all kinds of things to cope with that, and it's not beyond reason to think that some brothers self-medicate, you know, to deal with the vicissitudes, that kind of thing. I guess that's what Joseph is asking. I don't know if he's asking you to talk about whether or not that's a. I don't know what the particular question is. I mean, maybe you might take.
I'll try to, that's not my area of expertise, but I would say I would not recommend self-medicating. But that is not to say I don't recommend taking care of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Those are two totally different things. Self-medicating has a negative connotation. You know,
you're
taking some medication that you may not need to take. But taking care of yourself and self-awareness are totally different.
Mm-hmm.
We need to be much more aware of what we put into our bodies. We need to be much more aware of exercise. We need to be much more aware of controlling stress. We need to be much more aware of weight loss and those types of things. So self-awareness of taking care of yourself, yes. Self-medicating, no. Just to quickly answer his other questions about hospitals, I mean, hospitals can be dangerous places. I have been in hospitals. I've been in emergency rooms where people have come in there shooting in the emergency room.
Wow.
So it's not a mistake, and I'm glad that those metal detectors are there, especially when you're dealing with a trauma situation where you just had two gang members or two people that don't like each other very much shooting at each other. They come and they bring their families. And so we have to have security and metal detectors in the hospital, so it's there for a reason.
Man, they get to blasting down at Grady.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, everywhere. When I was in D.C.,
Wow,
everywhere. So it happens everywhere.
Wow, that's something to think. That's just really strange, because you would think that in a place like that, the concern would be to care for the person who's suffering, perhaps, and now you're in trauma. I mean, mm-hmm. from gunshot wounds or any kinds of injuries. You know, mm-hmm. you would think that persons would be concerned primarily with that rather than, I don't know if I should say vengeance, if that's mm-hmm. the correct term. He was getting even with somebody, trying to find out who did this to, you know, my friend and whatnot. And mm-hmm. you know, wow, that's a dangerous thing to think about. But I tell you this though. What I am happy about is that there are brothers like you, Dr. Jones, who are committed to, in some kind of way, doing what you can to increase the number of African Americans, whether they are male or female, to do what you can to position them to make a strong application, to be mm-hmm. a strong mm-hmm. candidate mm-hmm. for admission to our graduate school programs, whether they are at our premier institutions at Meharry or up at Howard. I'm thinking Morehouse School of Medicine. What are our other HBCUs that, or I would say our primarily African-American medical schools other than, mm-hmm. other than Meharry? I'm thinking Howard. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking about Morehouse.
And there's one more out in California, Charles Drew.
Okay, that's
LA.
Strange. Yeah, yeah. See, now, you know, to be honest with you, I don't know very much about a lot of those schools on the other side of the Mississippi. Mm-hmm. And I guess probably that's because most of our HBCUs are concentrated,
right.
you know, for the most part in the Southeast. But that's right. that's a wonderful thing. So what I want to do, you know, there's a book that you and I was talking about earlier, and it's called Medical Apartheid. It's the piece by Harriet Washington. And I love to throw this out, and I know this is something that you express an interest in. Medical apartheid is this piece that talks about how the medical profession has treated persons of African descent. You know, using them as test. Quentin used to call Quentin. My son would say to me things like, "Dad, I guess I'm the crash test dummy or something." Mm-hmm. You know, you're testing things out on me. My son would say those kinds of things. Medical apartheid is just, it looks at that kind of issue with respect to black folk. Mm-hmm. And when I say that, meaning the role that black people have played unknowingly mm-hmm. in the whole development of medicine. Mm-hmm. And it seems to me that when I've looked at Black Apartheid by Harriet Washington, and I want to tell our audience about that. You ought to read that piece. It's very, very helpful for looking at and even helping us understand why some blacks might be suspicious of mm-hmm. doctors, you know, because you take somebody like my daddy. My dad was born in the 40s. You couldn't make my daddy go to the hospital. He mm-hmm. wasn't having it. I mean, one thing my dad did not do was trust white doctors. Mm-hmm. He just didn't do it. Mm-hmm. I mean, and that's, you know, to his detriment, I think, but he would not do that. The good thing then, I say that to say this, that what you're doing, you're in many ways helping to provide a corrective to that. Trying to increase the numbers of African Americans, whether they're male or female, in graduate school. When we come back after the break, I want to talk specifically about that, about your program. In fact, the pre-med solution piece, that program, I want to talk about that. I want to talk about that and something else, but I really want to talk about that, how that got started, who's involved with that, what are you trying to do, what are your metrics, how do you measure you're being successful, success stories. Man, I want you to tell us about what you're doing. I want the whole universe to hear about this phenomenal program that's right here in Atlanta. And I want you to make sure you let them know how they can get up, become a part of it. All right, Frank?
Sounds good.
Hey, we got it. We got something to tell you. All right. News and Talk Radio 1380 WAOK, the voice of the community.
News and Talk 1380 WAOK.
Dr. Frank Jones is with me, and he is telling us about Pre-Med Solutions. And he's going to talk us about another important item. I want to go to the lines. I have Dr. Moradi. Dr. Moradi, how you doing, my friend?
All right, I'm doing great. How about yourself?
Man, I'm doing good now that I can hear your voice. What's happening? How you feeling, man? What's on your mind?
All right, I just want to, first of all, you know, I have the honor working, you know, with Dr. Jones for the past 4 years.
Okay.
And such a great, you know, honor to work with him. And I understand what he is trying to do for our community.
Mm-hmm.
And he is empowering underrepresented students, you know, to be presented in medical society
mm-hmm.
and in our professional society. And those students will be a leader of future. like himself.
Right.
So by empowering them, you know, you're really empowering our future, our community to be greater. And in this sense, I'm very grateful to be a part of that, working with Dr. Jones. And I truly appreciate his wisdom and his character. And he is truly a leader in our community. And all I wanted to say, I appreciate Dr. Jones, what you are doing, and God bless you and your family.
Hold on, man, Dr. Moradi, hold on. You are a first-time caller, right, to the gist of the matter. Your first time.
Exactly.
Man.
Exactly. I lost the power on my phone.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Yes.
Okay, well, hold on. We want to show you some first-time caller love. Listen, man, you keep on calling, keep on listening, and I want to make sure that you continue to support what Dr. Jones is up to, and I'm hoping, man, that we can work together to make some great things happen. Thank you for calling.
Before you hang up, I just got to say Dr. Moradi is one of my best friends. Yes, I love him like a brother. He's a leader himself, and he's doing some great things out at the Philadelphia College of Osteopathic Medicine, and he, along with some of my other colleagues out there, are very supportive of what we're doing. They participate. And
tell us what is osteopathic medicine for us lay people.
Osteopathic medicine is different. The other, if you get an MD degree, is allopathic. Osteopathic is a DO. And we really do the same things. There's a little bit more in osteopathic medicine that deals with holistic medicine, prevention, nutrition, the things that we really should be doing in allopathic medicine as well. But then there also is a portion of osteopathic manipulation, which is really good based on scientific and anatomic and physiologic principles. And I've had some manipulation done on me sometimes, and it really works.
Okay.
And so I'm a very strong advocate of DOs and MDs as well.
Wonderful.
Wonderful.
All right.
Wonderful, Dr.
Good talking to you. See you too.
Great.
All right. All right. Frank, I want you to talk to me about the Atlanta Medical Association. We might have to continue this conversation. Go on, tell us about the Atlanta Medical Association.
I'll talk real quick, but I am fortunate to be president of the Atlanta Medical Association. That's an organization that was founded in 1890 here for black physicians who really were having difficulty getting opportunities in Atlanta. And you can imagine what the atmosphere was like in 1890. So they formed this organization because there's unity in numbers, and they've done some—
Wait a minute, 1890?
1890.
Wow.
It was formed in 1890.
So is that Jim Crow? That's after Reconstruction. Is that Jim Crow? That's not Jim Crow period, is it? I mean, Reconstruction ends in 1877. I mean, I guess you would call my black physicians.
Yeah.
There were several
of them here, and so they had the foresight to form this organization, and so we represent about 2,500 black physicians in the Metro Atlanta area. Not all of them are members, but we represent them. And we are the local organization of the Georgia State Medical Association, and our parent organization is the National Medical Association. And we're just all about doing those things. Particularly with the Atlanta Medical Association, we have several pillars, and that is mentoring. We've talked about that all night, so I won't go into that. Also increasing our membership, because we need to increase our membership so that we can go out and do the things that we want to do. And we also want to raise money. We give scholarship money to students at the black medical schools. We've given away tens of thousands of dollars to students at Morehouse, Meharry, and Howard, and also advocacy for our patients and for other physicians. And then we do a lot of community service with Hosea Feed the Hungry, the Champs Healthcare Organization.
I've seen you. One year we were doing Hosea Feed the Hungry, and we were down there together.
Mm-hmm.
And I, was that the organization you was with when, because we were down there together at the convention center?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
World Congress Center. That's
World Congress Center.
Right, yeah. Right. Okay. Yeah.
So we do a lot of community service. But
Sean, you was down there too. You were down there while they were down there. Long story. At Hosea Feeds Hungry. Yeah. Yeah. We were actually, because Sean was down there actually with us.
Okay.
So go ahead.
Great organization. But I do want to mention that, you know, we're doing some great things here in the Atlanta Medical Association. My chief operating officer, Dr. Priscilla Hubbard, along with our other officers.
Priscilla Hubbard.
Yeah. You know Dr. Hubbard.
Yeah,
Dr. Hubbard.
Yeah.
She's kind of the backbone of our organization.
Yeah.
She's our chief operating officer. But we are doing so many things for the community
Great.
And for our physicians and for our future physicians. One thing I want to mention is coming up next August 1st through the 5th, the National Medical Association will be coming home. We say coming home because the NMA really started. Got its start from the Atlanta Medical Association.
Okay.
We're going to have a huge conference here in Atlanta. We're expecting between 15 and 20,000 physicians to be here and all of their family members and friends. We're just going to have a very big educational, social, networking activities from August 1st through the 5th. So we want you all to just be prepared, and there'll be much more to come about that. But just had to get in about the Atlanta Medical Association. Our members are doing so much. We have some strategic partnerships with several organizations, with Emory University and uh-huh. the Geriatric Workforce Program, St. Jude's Hospital. We have a big partnership coming up with them that we'll talk about later. We partner with all the hospitals in Atlanta. They all support our Heritage Fund Ball,
wow.
which is coming up on February 1st at the Gateway Marriott. Please, please come. We have between 700 and 1,000 people there. That's where we raise our money for our scholarships. One thing that I am destined to do before we leave, I want to give away our first full tuition scholarship.
Wow.
We have enough black folks in Atlanta that we can give away full tuition scholarships to our medical students. And so if there are any folks out there that want to form some strategic partnerships with us, we're always looking to partner with people, partnerships that make sense. One of my favorite partnerships, we just partnered with Booker T. Washington High School.
Okay.
We have these dinners all the time where we go out, we spend money, we eat every third Thursday. And we were just thinking, you know, we need to do something in the school system. We need to go to a high school in the inner city of Atlanta. It turns out they have a culinary arts program and a STEM program and a pre-med program.
Mm.
So instead of going spending $2,000, $3,000 at a big fancy restaurant, we went and ate at Booker T. Washington High School, and the kids in the culinary program cooked the food for us. And when I tell you their food was as good as any food that we've had, their service was as good as any service, and it just meant so much more to see our students, our young students, in what most people would call a underprivileged situation, but there was nothing underprivileged about the way they treated us and how they served us. And we formed a strategic partnership with Booker T. Washington High School. Want to give a shout out to their principal, Dr. Coaxum Young. She's got things going on over there at Booker T. Washington High School. But we're always looking to form strategic partnerships
wow.
with the Atlanta Medical Association.
Well, Frank, I tell you what, we got to go. Tell us again how we can get in touch with you, how we can, you know, find out and learn more about what Premed Solutions is up to, what's on the agenda, about the Atlanta Medical Association. Let us know how we can just stay in touch with you guys.
Right. So you can reach us at www.premedsolutions.com, www.premedsolutions.com. We also have our nonprofit arm, which is AIM for Premed Solutions. It's www.aimforpremedsolutions.com. You can go on there and donate because we need money. We're trying to provide money to help students be able to go on their interviews, to be able to pay. Some students don't even have a suit
yeah.
to go to an interview. Some students don't have money to drive
yeah.
to get an airline ticket. So we're trying to raise money so that we can give this money to the students to help them with this. And then we have the Atlanta Medical Association. It's atlantamedicalassociation.org. And for all of you physicians in Atlanta that are not members of the Atlanta Medical Association, we want you to come and get on board. We have some exciting things going on. And especially our young physicians. That's
yes.
who we're really trying to get. And we're all doing it to help raise scholarship money for our medical students.
Wow. I tell you, great conversation. Frank, thank you. Do you promise to come back?
I promise.
All right.
I promise. Thanks for having me.
Oh, man. I'm glad you're here.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.